Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Let me pick it twice, because if there's no Zeke, I would be with Atlanta. If there's Zeke, I would take Dallas. I'll be honest.
Okay, so we'll allow you that.
We'll allow you that.
For you, Ezekiel Elliott is the turning point. We will give you that game where, if regardless of what the line is at that point.
He flips and he flops.
Man. That's fine.
Hey. Hey, at least I'm on the record with my flip-flop, Omaha boy.
Yeah. Oh, I owned it. Yeah. I celebrate their stakes and their state capital.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
All righty, then. We are live at Chatter, where we start breakfast at 7 in the morning on the corner of Wisconsin Avenue Northwest and Jennifer Street Northwest, inside the line. We're in the capital of the United States of America. We have an enormous crowd here.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Applaud yourself. Let me make sure
holiday
that
crowd.
Ian Thomas Lutz is at the bar, who signs it once an Eagle, always an Eagle. David would like that, because that's American University. Bill Isaacson is here. I'm not going to go through every single person who's here, but I'm very glad you're all here, and we have great announcements to make. As soon as I do this, Eric from the Palm brought me a note from Derek Lipson from the 20th Special Forces Group.
Still getting mail at the Palm, then, a
yeah.
little bit.
Yeah. He said, remember us old-time littles at the Palm? Greatest thing I heard from Mary Pat, you can order a half portion of the chicken parm. It's half the size of your head, so nothing to take home to the hotel and eat over the sink. So I didn't know this. So I said to Eric, when did this happen? And he said, did you say it was named after me? Fantastic. That's great to
well,
know.
You are the one who always says if there's something you want, it's not on the menu, ask. Typically,
well,
though.
But don't usually ask for half orders, though.
Yeah.
You know.
It seems like the most logical thing to ask for at a nice restaurant.
Yes, right. I think so. Well,
I think people start doing that here. Could I have like half of a cheeseburger?
Half a slice of bacon.
Yeah.
You can do that.
Yeah, okay.
That doesn't mean you'll get it. It means you can order it. You can ask. Gene McManus is here. Gary Braun is here. Michael Kornheiser is here. Nigel's going to run the board later in the show. Ann Hornaday will join us, our predictive analysis expert. Jeff Ma, who's at least at 500. He's 6-6.
Yes.
He's going to join us. This is the show open. Now, before we actually get into the show, there are some announcements. First of all, I didn't know that Veterans Day was celebrated today. Today is a Friday. Today is November 10th. Veterans Day is the new name of what was originally Armistice Day, which was celebrated on November 11th because 11-11-11 was the end of World War I. Okay, so then there are more wars, and now you make it Veterans Day, and I understand that. But most holidays in America, other than Thanksgiving and July 4th and Christmas, they're celebrated on Mondays. They're celebrated on Monday.
But
so
November,
why is this celebrated on Friday?
Well, because November 11th falls on a Saturday.
Yes, that is.
So if government or federal or whatever state workers get a holiday for Veterans Day, then they take it on Friday.
Okay.
This would be Veterans Day, parentheses, observed.
If it fell on Sunday, would they take Monday?
Yeah.
So that's the roll of the dice?
Sure. Yeah.
Saturday or Sunday?
Yeah.
So are schools closed today?
Some are.
Half day for low-level schools in Montgomery County.
What do you mean by low-level?
Whatever. Elementary and, you know,
like
where my kids
schools?
Go. Remedial, you know.
Yeah. Like BOCES?
Yeah.
Like what?
So I think it's the closest.
Reform school.
The closest weekday is the observed day.
Okay, I didn't know
if the actual 11th is.
So I didn't know. So we have a big crowd. I'm happy for
thank
that.
Thank you to our veterans. We should
absolutely.
Yes,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
We love our veterans.
So here's what I wanted to say, and now I have a bigger crowd to say it to, at least physically in the room today. We're going to be closed here on Chatter Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday for renovation.
Wow.
When you come back to this restaurant, which is a full-service, for-profit restaurant, a neighborhood restaurant, when you come back, it's going to look better. We've already improved the food. We've already improved the wine. We've already improved the beer.
When are you going to get to the entertainment?
This is the show is the show, but it's going to look better. And we're going to have brand new bathrooms. The ladies' room, the women's room. Gene, which is
you're getting applause in the new bathroom.
Yeah.
Yes, that's
right
applause.
On, sisters.
So I had this conversation last night with the socialite. And I say, well, when are the bathrooms going to be done? He said, they should have been done last week. Of course, construction is what construction is. What I am told, I'm not ever in the construction business. What I'm told is that whatever they tell you about the cost and the time is a lie.
Correct.
It will cost more and it will take more time.
Correct.
And my position would be, well, if we sign a contract and it is stipulated that we pay X and it's done on X date and it's not, then why do I have to pay? And apparently I still have to pay.
Correct.
So it's great to be in construction because you can do what you want.
You don't have to pay, but what you don't want is a contractor leaving you in the middle of
a job.
No,
that's right. I understand that.
So they've sort of gotcha at that point.
So the women's bathrooms are better now, though not fully completed, will be completed shortly by the time we are open again. And the men's bathrooms, the men's bathrooms are not great. I was going to go worse, but I'm just going to say not great. And they've been not great for, 40 years. And I said to the socialite last night, when are they going to... He says, guys don't care. I said, wait, hold on a second. I think guys care. I don't think they're going to make a federal case about it. I don't think it's as terrible as if the women's rooms are bad. But so maybe we will and maybe
we
won't.
But I'll tell you this. A bad bathroom sends a message about the restaurant as a whole.
that's my feeling.
Well, the bathrooms
are clean.
But maybe
you like that message.
Or, I can't speak to the women. Clean, the bathroom is clean.
But it's not attractive.
Right.
It's not attractive.
It's old. It's worn. It's been here a while.
It's dented. There are dents.
Are you going to rename the restaurant Mitzi's?
No. It's still going to be Chatter. Okay. We like Chatter.
Are there any implications for this here podcast for early next week?
We're going to have to bring our own food in Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday.
Okay, but we are doing the show.
We're doing it, but we're not going to have people...
Right.
I mean, what happens if people come? We want them to come Thursday or Friday.
Well, they can be like Christmas carolers, run outside.
It's gonna be by the way, it's gonna be freezing.
Yes, it will be.
Freezing.
You want them to come Thursday or Friday, but I would encourage they stay tuned just in case the work takes a little bit longer than scheduled. Yeah.
But we're renovating and it's gonna
be great. Very exciting.
Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday for breakfast because those
we're not gonna have breakfast. Right. So I would say to people if they're here today, order two.
And that renovation was a condition of the sale, or is that just extra money you're dumping out into this thing?
That's extra money.
All right.
That's extra money.
I can tell you love that.
Yeah, I just brought that up just to twist the knife a little
We're
bit.
Going to do great here. We're going to make Chatter great. Not even again. Because we're going to make Chatter great.
Well, Chatter has never been great
that's
before.
Right. So
it didn't exist.
It's a really smart business plan, waiting 9 months to update the bathrooms. If only you had done that last winter.
There were people in my own family who told me to do that. My daughter said, no, you do it before you open. And I said, everybody seems to think we should just stay open because we're open. It's been this way for a long time. My daughter was apparently right.
Yes.
And my son is right.
The tiles are chipped.
Chipped tiles.
There's no bathroom tissue in those bathrooms.
Oh, let's not elaborate too much more.
What?
Can't spare a square?
Cannot spare a square.
We're going to have better stuff. Our stuff is good now. It's going to be better.
Bigly.
Ronnie told me to say that all the time. Our stuff's good now. It's going to be better. But it's going to look a lot. It already looks
that's
better.
That's exciting.
They've already painted the stairway downstairs. The trim is everything is sort of nice. And there'll be more pictures of Gary Williams. And I think that's a
good
big draw.
That's a way to go. People want to see that while they eat.
Yes.
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 No, he's cute.
He is cute.
Yeah.
Better
Gary.
Looking than me in the socialite. Come
no
on
question.
Now.
Put it together, yeah.
So the beginning of the show today, well, that was mostly at the beginning, but I wanted to get to the Seattle game for a couple of reasons. The first reason is the people in Las Vegas, they know what they're doing. That is a six-point game. At one point early in the fourth quarter, Seattle has won the game. They're up, what are they up,
22-10? 22-10.
They've won the game. And now the question is Arizona going to score at all? With 20 seconds left, Arizona scores. Total garbage time score, right?
What we call backdoor cover, yeah.
And now they're going to kick the point, and now it's going to be a five-point game, and everybody who bet on Arizona is going to be really happy.
Including Reginald.
And the bad beats that Scott Van Pelt does will begin with the people who bet on Seattle. And the kick is blocked. It's blocked. How many kicks are blocked? What is the percentage
extra
of blocking?
Extra points, maybe three this season.
A whole
have been
year.
Blocked. I don't know.
And so now it's an even game. It's an even game. So Chuck Todd doesn't lose the game or win the game. And Reginald doesn't lose or win.
Right. I got the late night text from Chuck Todd. Just push with five exclamation
points. He was very happy because he looked like a loser.
Here is where, as we dive deep into gambling, here is where you really want to shop. I mean, people talk about like shopping for cheap money when you get a mortgage. I mean, the difference between 3.25 and 3.5 is a big deal.
It's big.
So in a game like this, if you had multiple outlets, if you were walking down the strip at Las Vegas, or you were going online because you're at offshore books, you could find Arizona +6.5. You could have found that, and that would have made it a win.
Could you find Seattle -5.5?
No, but you could have found them at -6 and avoided a loss.
Well, that's what they did.
Right.
That was our line, -6.
So Right. So the point is,
so if you liked Arizona,
you would have been smart to have and that's why James sometimes will say, buy me the half point. You know, if it was minus 6.5, buy me the half to get it to 7, because that makes a big
difference.
That's
called the hook.
Yes. That's very good, Tony.
Well, you know, I've been in the show
hung
for
around degenerates long enough.
Yes. The big news in that game is, Russell Wilson made that great scramble
silly
play.
Yeah.
Right, it's ridiculous.
But the big news on the game, two things. Adrian Peterson was going to get at least 37 carries, everybody said. And one of us went on the PTI show last night and said, you know what? If he goes three and out, he's not getting anywhere near 37 carries. Because everybody was concerned with the physical health of people.
Well, he had 37 carries on Sunday. That was 4 days ago.
What's he going to do on Wednesday? Well, Wilbon claimed it was 3 days ago yesterday, but it was four days ago yesterday. Yeah. Anyway, we both agreed that it would be maybe 25 would be the over-under number on Peterson. It was 21 because he only gained 29 yards on 21 carries, which is brutally terrible. Well, it's just terrible.
You take away his long of 9, and he had 20 yards under. On 20 carries.
And then he's under. So what happens is that Seattle says, how are we going to win this game? We're going to stop him.
Yeah,
because the quarterback can't hurt us. So we're going to stop him and see what happens. The other big news and the greater news in the game is that Richard Sherman is now out. He tore his Achilles. He's out for the rest of the year. He is another one of the very, very high-profile stars. And you determine high-profile in the NFL, which is a helmet league, by commercials.
Volume.
Commercials without your helmets. Richard Sherman's in a lot of commercials. J.J. Watt, Aaron Rodgers, Odell Beckham Jr., they're all out at this point. And now Richard Sherman is out. And afterwards, his teammate, Doug Baldwin, said, this is a direct quote, Thursday night football should be illegal. Now, what do we make? Thursday night football, what the position would be is we just played on Sunday. It's terrible for our bodies. The counter position would be everyone loves the Thanksgiving Day games, which the last time I looked, unless I'm wrong, are on Thursday. They're on Thursday following a Sunday. And everyone loves those games and sits by their television sets all day long.
That's completely different.
Well, tell me how.
There is an additional counterposition, and that is there's that's a $900 million deal, the Thursday night deal between NBC and CBS.
Right.
So that's a strong financial counterposition. But go ahead, Gene.
Thanksgiving is a holiday. Families are gathered together. In the United States of America, football and Thanksgiving go hand in hand.
That's right.
Thursday night, your average Thursday night, is a weeknight. People work. They have to get up the next morning. To me, it's like the whole rhythm of that game is wrong, has always been wrong. I have to force myself to remember, there's an NFL game on.
But you would have to agree that from a health standpoint, that if you play Sunday and then you play Thursday, that can be very tough on your body. That can make you prone to injury in a way that going Sunday to Sunday is
absolutely.
Not.
Absolutely. From a player's perspective, I understand it. But I'm representing the viewer's perspective, and I really don't like
it. So you don't like the Thursday night game at all?
I hate it.
Really?
I hate it.
Michael?
If you're looking at injuries, I just don't see how that the push of 2 days makes that much of a difference. I understand the whole the holiday sentiment towards the Thanksgiving Day game. But to me, I'm okay with the Thursday night game. I don't particularly watch it, but I don't think I'm their target audience. I think it's an easy argument for players to make that they are just totally anti the game because of scheduling mishaps, because of transportation issues, travel issues. I think the game itself is fine. I think there's issues underneath it that they might be, you know, tiptoeing around.
There are experiments that accrue around the Thursday night game, the uniforms. Which are completely
color
different.
Rush.
Yeah, they're chromatic uniforms, monochromatic.
Gimmick.
And next Thursday they're going to show it from the sky cam angle alone, which is what you get in
video. Have them all wear mouse ears on Thursday night.
How great would that be?
That'd be very
don't
cool.
You think?
I think Disney would like that.
Yeah,
just we don't that have for Monday that. Night.
They could sell that.
Yeah, we should do that on Monday night. So you're totally opposed.
I hate it,
Gary. What does it do in betting?
Have they studied betting?
No. But have they studied the pattern?
You mean in terms of lines, in terms of covering, or in terms of action?
I don't know.
I'm sure someone has. That's a good question for Jeff Ma, I guess, when we have him on later. As a consumer of the league, I like it because I like to watch football. I would disagree with Michael. I see the difference in terms of injuries and body. I mean, these guys, their schedules are very regimented week to week. And we talked about this before we went on. Richard Sherman, about a year ago, wrote a column about how he hated this game and it causes injuries.
I think most players hate it.
And he went into exacting detail about their schedules and what this does to their schedules. I mean, Granted, they were just going Seattle to Arizona, so that's not that bad. But some of these guys are traveling cross country. They're traveling on Wednesday when they played on Sunday or Sunday afternoon.
If they play a late
home
game
Sunday night,
it's tough.
Normally they would have Tuesday off. Now they're walking through, and I think it takes a toll. Now, Richard Sherman,
it also pays the salary.
I heard driving in this morning, listening to Kip Sheeman's show. Sherman apparently Tuesday he was listed as questionable with Achilles soreness. He was complaining of a sore Achilles this week.
He said it all year.
So.
That's not the game. That's coaching and that's personnel.
That's a personal decision. But you have to wonder, is that ankle not could it not maybe have used a couple more days rest and maybe it would have held up?
If it's chronic, I don't know.
But you know this the toothpaste out of the tube, man. This thing makes way too much money. I don't know what the numbers are like, but I'm sure it's as highly rated as any game when it's a decent matchup like this one. They've had some stinkers.
It's not as highly rated as any game. I mean,
not as premier Sunday night game, but as any Monday night game.
Have they plotted number of injuries in the NFL with the arrival of Thursday night football? I wonder if there's some correlation.
I'm sure there is, which is why it's sort of bogus because they claim they care about player safety.
All right, we will take a break. We will come back. Ann Hornaday will join us with a bunch of movies, yes?
That's right.
I am Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Blue Apron read. Now, it's going to be really cold
tonight.
Blue
Apron weather, yeah.
In Washington, D.C., it will be around 20 degrees tonight. The wind chill will be around 20. I think the low is projected to be about 25 or 26. So that's a good time.
Killing frost.
Yes, that's a good time to get Blue Apron.
Bring in your plants.
And you sit around and you cook while you make a fire in your house. Hopefully you have a fireplace. And if not, it would
be... Yeah, do not make a fire in your house with no fireplace.
You get variety from Blue Apron. You can choose from a variety of new recipes each week or let Blue Apron's culinary team surprise you. Recipes not repeated within a year. You'll never get bored. You can customize your recipes each week based upon your own preferences. Blue Apron has several delivery options. You only choose what fits your needs. There's no weekly commitment. You only get deliveries when you want them. Each meal comes with a step-by-step, easy-to-follow recipe card. Pre-portioned ingredients can be prepared in 40 minutes or less. Again, I think you need two people. You need at least three hands and three pots on this. Blue Apron's freshness guarantee promises that every ingredient in your delivery arrives ready to cook or they will make it right. You can check out this week's menu. You can get $30 off your first order with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/TonyK. Blue Apron is spelled just the way you think it is, BLUEAPRON. You will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. Don't wait. That's blueapron.com/TonyK. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
I was lying in my head in the hospital bed just before the room caught fire.
Whoa, it must be like a Metro car in the hospital. This is from Jay Sherman in Alameda, California, who said, I live next to the Chevy Chase Circle in the 60s. I love the podcast. This is my son's Luke Rathborn's latest. He was in this month's issue of Rolling Stone. I hope you like it. Rolling Stone, they're paid to get it right.
I lived near Chevy Chase Circle in the 60s.
Did you know?
I didn't know that name.
Did you know Jay Sherman, who's now in Alameda, California?
No, I don't.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry. I'm sure he's a nice fellow. I don't really know. Ann Hornaday joins us now. She's at, you know, some film festival. Where are you? What film festival is this?
I don't know. What day is it? I swear to God, there is a festival every week now.
Yeah.
So, in this great country of ours. And I think it's fantastic. And I've been able to visit a few. I was in Milwaukee about a month, 6 weeks ago. They have a great festival. Obviously, you know, I'm a big fan of Middleburg. Easton has a really interesting little festival, the Chesapeake Film Festival. Now I'm in Charlottesville for the Virginia Film Festival, which is actually... This is one of the oldest and most venerable festivals, local regional festivals in the country. It's 30 years old now, and it's a really interesting festival. And of course, Charlottesville's fantastic, so we're having a great time. I did opening night last night. They showed the new Alexander Payne movie, Downsizing, which I find quite charming. We'll talk about it in a few weeks.
Can I ask the obvious question with all these film festivals that you go to?
Yeah.
Do they all show different movies, or does some of them show the same movies? I mean, like if I was a filmmaker and I had to say just opened in Middleburg as opposed to Cannes, I would probably feel that my movie wasn't that good.
No, untrue, actually. I mean, okay. I think every film has its own life that it needs to build. And I think
you're getting very close to soccer when you say things like that. That every trip up and down the pitch is its own novella. You're getting very close.
There you go, exactly. It all has its own narrative arc. But no, seriously, I mean, I think these festivals, especially these small regional ones, they really do serve a valuable purpose because they attract people who still go to movies, you know, who like to sit in a seat in a dark room with other people and watch. And so, and then they talk about them to their friends. You know, I mean, these are influencers. You know, these are like really very influential people in their circles at places like Middleburg and in Charlottesville. And of course, with Charlottesville, it's deeply tied to the university, UVA. And so you have a very high caliber of audience. You know, it's like a very intellectually engaged audience who are active in their communities and active maybe on, you know, in social media and, you know, it's a good audience to have. It's okay. A very good audience to have. So I think that that's the argument. And like with this festival, like you asked about the movies, they have a really interesting program. They're showing a lot of, like they're showing The Graduate this weekend. You know, they're showing Hidden Figures because Margot Lee Shetterly, the author, is going to be here. Then they're showing new movies like Hostiles and Call Me By Your Name. And then they're showing lots and lots of more esoteric art films. So they have a very, very diverse program, which is nice.
Okay. All right, well, let me get to some movies that are, like, not at the film festival in Virginia. They're just out for the general public.
One of them is, actually, but yes.
All right, well, we can talk about when we get to it. You'll tell me which one it is.
Yeah.
But let's start with something that bothers me, Murder on the Orient Express, just because I saw the original Murder on the Orient Express, which is a fabulous, fabulous movie. I don't think the plot changes. So I wonder, how is this, and why, you know, this is the age-old question I have with you. Why do they remake movies that you can watch that are really good? Why?
Well, why? I will tell you, I disagree with, respectfully disagree. I think this is precisely the kind of movie that one should remake, and I'll tell you why. Yes, we have fond memories of that 74 movie. but as you said, Agatha Christie, this is Agatha Christie. It's, you know, it's one of her little potted mysteries that all takes place in one location on this beautiful train. It's very talky, you know, I mean, it's because it's so confined.
Yep.
It's stagey, you know, there's not a lot, there's nowhere to go, you know, with this story. I mean, you have to keep it on the train. So I do think that limitation really does lend itself to different interpretations. And I will tell you, you know, this one's been directed by Kenneth Branagh, who I think is actually a very good director. And he does some things, even with that kind of claustrophobic, limited canvas, I think he does a beautiful job with the train. It looks gorgeous. He films through, like, beveled glass. And he uses the space, I think, in an interesting way. The casting is good. He has Daisy Ridley, and Michelle Pfeiffer is absolutely magnificent. He plays Poirot, and I do think, you know, with this huge, enormous mustache that I found a little bit distracting. But to your point, I actually did take a teenage member of my household who hadn't seen the 74 movie, probably wouldn't see it, and didn't know the ending, and really liked it. And so I think this is the kind of movie you can take, you know, especially with holidays coming up. You can take the family, and I'm always looking out for those where you can take grandma and the 10-year-old and all kind of have a good time, and I think this is that movie.
Well, you can also take them to Wally World unless grandma passes out on top of the car.
Or if it's closed. You know,
exactamundo.
There's another movie called LBJ, which I have to assume is about the president, with Woody Harrelson and Jennifer Jason Leigh. Well, I guess Bryan Cranston's one-man show. Was that a one-man show last year?
Yeah.
Then that was a stage show, and I guess that was released on HBO.
Yes.
So
yes,
I thought it was a movie, but it wasn't actually a movie. So is this any good?
You know, it is. I mean, I think it's very traditional biopic, but given the fact that LBJ has been such a supporting character in so many movies, and often, you know, let's face it, I don't think he's necessarily fairly treated in JFK. I mean, you know, he's kind of this repository for all of Stone's most paranoid.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. Yes.
And so Selma, he wasn't represented correctly, was he?
Well,
was there
I actually thought he was more fairly. I actually thought he was very well portrayed in Selma.
Okay.
I do think there was this unfortunate suggestion there that he literally ordered, you know, the scurrilous bugging of Martin Luther King. Mm-hmm. I don't think that was fair. I think his political pressures he was under during that time were very fairly represented in that movie. And I thought he was beautiful, played by Michael Gambon. But, Tom Wilkinson. But this is that kind of conventional, traditional, admiring biopic that his, you know, that LBJ fans have long wanted. And I think Woody Harrelson does a really good job. I mean, at first you're thinking like, huh? Is he going to pull this off? And he does. He really does. I think he does a great job of portraying him. I mean, like I said, it is admiring. This is not, you know, this is not super probing or critical, but it's a really, you know, it's an interesting assessment of the man in full and okay. The impact of his presidency. And I think he deserves that. You know, it's fair.
This is an odd juxtaposition because the name of the next movie is Lady Bird, who we all associate with LBJ to begin with. And we've chatted about this, haven't we? This is Greta Gerwig, who you think is really, really good, who writes it and directs it. And I think I've been upset because she also sometimes collaborates with Noah, what's his name, who just wrote that terrible movie, The Squid and the Whale.
About this with you and Noah, but we're gonna fix this.
Okay. Anyway, so is
you
this?
Never, you, so you didn't see the Meyerowitz stories? I'm saying.
No, I haven't seen. I haven't seen a movie in over a year.
I know you're a busy man.
I'm not busy. I'm just boring. I mean, no.
I
just turn on CNN every night.
I hear
and then
you, my
after
brother,
5 minutes,
right
I go, I can't watch any more of this, and I find whatever game is on.
Meyerowitz is on Netflix. It's very easy to watch.
I don't know how. I don't have Netflix.
Yeah.
Or does everybody have Netflix?
So maybe we can start with the Netflix and we do the baby. No, but this, oh my God, this movie is one of my absolute slam dunk, all time, knockdown, drag out favorites of the year. You must see this movie. It is so well done. It's Saoirse Ronan, who was the actress in Brooklyn.
How is her name pronounced?
I believe.
Ronan.
No, not Ronan. Saoirse? Is that how it's pronounced? Saoirse?
Miss Ronan. Saoirse.
How does she play a high school kid? How is that possible?
You will buy it from the get-go.
When you see the picture.
From the moment she opens her mouth.
She's great.
She's
that
great.
That movie, I'm not supposed to like that movie, Brooklyn. That's a great movie.
Yeah.
It's a great movie.
Wasn't that a great movie?
Yes,
what
yes,
a movie.
Yes.
That's the movie. You will be astonished, especially loving her in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
You will be astonished at what she does with this character. I mean, she just transformed. And it's like anybody, you saw what she looked like in Brooklyn. The woman is like translucent.
Yes.
Her skin is
so
perfect. And here she has acne and she's got like a bad pink hair dye job. She's just this little angsty teenager, a little spiky little thing. And you believe her, like I said, from the moment she opens her mouth. And Laurie Metcalf, who most of us know as Roseanne's sister on the Roseanne sitcom, but who's really a great stage actress, here delivers just a fantastic supporting performance as her mom. Everybody in this movie is great. It's perfectly written. It's perfectly executed. It's just one of those movies that's just, it's just great on every level. It's funny. It's meaningful. It'll ring true to anyone who's been a daughter or a mother or a son or a father. It's just great. It's wonderful.
Is this going to be an Oscar-nominated movie for a bunch of people?
I believe so.
Okay.
Is
it this year's Moonlight in your mind?
I think, yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, it's interesting, the comparison, because it is a coming-of-age tale like Moonlight was. It's in a completely different vernacular in terms of the visual language. You know, Moonlight was very structural and formal. This is also structural and formal, but in a more linear, you know, more conventionally narrative way.
Okay.
But it's that kind of movie that is so smooth and so of a piece and that it looks easy. And I think it's deceptively hard. It's like, this is the kind of thing that looks so easy and it's really hard to make it look that easy. It just feels natural, spontaneous, and honest. And that's the hardest thing to achieve. And I think she's done it just absolutely brilliantly.
Okay, the next movie is Last Flag Flying. This is Steve Carell, Lawrence Fishburne, and Bryan Cranston.
Right, and that's the one that's at the Virginia Film Festival this weekend. And this is kind of a loose spiritual sequel to The Last Detail with Jack Nicholson from 1973. Mm-hmm. And it's not literally, like the characters don't have the same name, but people who are familiar with that 73 movie, they'll recognize little biographical moments that harmonize, you know, that echo. And it's about three Vietnam veterans who reunite to bring the body of a fallen Marine to Arlington to burial in the U.S. During the Iraq War. So it's kind of a look back at Vietnam. It's a connector between those two conflicts. It's about men. It's about war. It's about friendship. It's a road trip, much like that last detail was. It's kind of, you know, it's got this kind of ambling, low-key vibe. It's directed by Richard Linklater, who is really known for that kind of, he's very unobtrusive as a director. He doesn't overplay anything. He kind of lets these performances breathe. I think there are moments where you feel like, this isn't really going anywhere. And they're kind of ambling along and walking and talking and riding trains and talking. And then, as is often true with Linklater, he gets you to this point toward the end of the movie where you are so knocked over by the emotion and you realize he's been building up to this all along. And it's actually deeply, deeply moving. And I didn't necessarily buy Carell as a Vietnam vet. But like I said, by the end of the movie, you are just so in love with his character and so moved by what he's experiencing. Cranston, having played LBJ, he's got the showy role, which I think is, you know, it's a little showy, but I think Carell and Fishburne are doing things that are more subtle. But it's a very moving movie.
By the way, just a completely off topic, because yeah, I mentioned this, that Steve Carell, and I haven't seen the movie yet. I've seen just the stuff on TV, as Bobby Riggs, looks exactly like Bobby Riggs. And I know I've mentioned that. Well, in the trailer, for The Post, the movie about the Pentagon Papers, Meryl Streep, it's unbelievable how much she looks like Katharine Graham. The way she stands, the way she walks, the way it's...
Except for one thing. She's wearing the wrong shoes. Mrs. Graham never would have worn those shoes.
Is that right?
Yes.
What?
Yes.
Because aren't you amazed at how much she looks like her?
Yeah, and you know, Tom Hanks has some of Ben's mannerisms.
Yes, he does.
Down pat,
yeah. But only when he wears the Turnbull and Asser shirt.
Right.
Not when he wears just a regular white shirt.
Sleeves.
Mrs. Graham wore a certain Ferragamo, and the Meryl Streep shoes are much too high and chunky.
High, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This is so should've great. I love this show.
That's why we have a woman's chair here.
I love this. I like this.
Okay. By the way, can I make one announcement?
No.
Okay. Well, this weekend is the 75th anniversary of the release of Casablanca, so it's out in theaters. They're actually showing it again out in theaters, including run over there at Mars.
Oh, they should remake it.
Okay.
Yes.
Maybe Ashton Kutcher.
Well, remake it, of course, with Denzel Washington.
Yeah, why not?
Because he's in all the remakes. Thank you, Anne.
Always a pleasure.
Anne Hornaday, boys and girls. We will come back with, Old Guy Radio, right?
No,
are we news?
News and Jeff Ma.
News and Jeff Ma when we return. So I got that completely wrong, which happens all the time. I am Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the policy genius, Reed. Life insurance, if you're an adult, especially one with kids, you know you need it. But it's so easy to put off. Yeah, because what do you care about your kids for? Shopping for life insurance is confusing. It takes forever, and you have to speak to an agent just to get a quote. Well, Policy Genius lets you compare life insurance from the top providers online. It takes as little as 5 minutes, or if you're busy, 1 minute per day for 5 days. If you find a policy you like and you want to know more, you can talk to one of their licensed experts. But if you're just browsing, you don't have to talk to anyone. Just browse away. And they don't just do life insurance. You can get disability insurance, renter's insurance, pet insurance, which you should get, and compare health insurance. So if you need life insurance, but you've been putting it off, try Policy Genius. You can compare life insurance online on your own terms in your own time. PolicyGenius.com. Because you should only be forced to speak to an agent if you've committed a federal crime. That is a great tagline. That's a great tagline.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is sent to us by Rick Devens. I hope I pronounced that correctly. Who is the morning anchor on WGXA in Macon,
Rick,
Georgia.
On the Twitter.
I'm so excited to hear from you. Huge fan. The song is written and performed by my wife, Becca Devens. You absolutely have our permission to use it. Keep up the great work. One of these days, that's signed in the studio, and he says it's to Nigel. We'll get past zero. I doubt it.
Yeah, probably not.
Michael, how do people send their music into us?
They can email it into the show at jingles at tonycornheisershow.com.
And if they sent it in a brand new car that Michael could have, that would be great, too.
A car that I could lift up the car seat into. That'd be great for my back.
That's good. All right. We have news, but first we have Jeff Ma, right? We have our predictive analysis genius.
That's right.
Jeff Ma. And before we get into picks.
Bet the process, right?
A question came up, Jeff, earlier in this show about the Thursday night football games. And what we wondered about, does anybody study the pattern of betting or study the pattern of covering? Are Thursday night games different in any reasonable way from Sunday that can be attributed perhaps to, you know, lack of rest?
Turn.
Yeah, and the quick turnaround.
I mean, I think they're definitely different. I don't think there's been enough of them quite yet for us to know for sure. And this is one of those things with using statistics and using data to try to predict things. You have a lot of things that change. It's hard to sort of control all the variables, right? You'll have this year, in the last 2 years, they've started adding more and, you know, they've started doing different sort of teams at first that were only like a lot of in conference games. It's just hard right now. I mean, I think we all know that they're different. We watch them, but in terms of predictability, I don't think there is a lot of predictability yet from them.
Do you tend to stay away from Thursday night games, or do you see Thursday night games as a golden opportunity, or are they no different than any other games?
Kind of no different than any other games. I mean, the two teams typically are on the same field, meaning like they're both playing with short rest, so there's no advantage there. They're just like anything else. We sort of model them the same way, we don't treat them any differently in terms of whether we bet on them or not.
Okay, tell us the name of the podcast again, because we always want to plug your position.
I appreciate that. It's called Bet the Process, and it's sort of about sports gambling and analytics, but from a real data-driven standpoint. We try not to give a lot of picks, but discuss a lot of things like, you know, what the committee did and whether they did the right thing in college football, or, you know, what teams are likely now to good value to win the Super Bowl, those types of things. Not necessarily as much about just like touting and giving picks.
By the way, there certainly seems to be a rush in baseball now to hire as managers people who are completely willing to be persuaded and moved by analytics, right? I mean, I've noticed that in the last few managers that have been named.
Well, I mean, I think when you look at the World Series and the playoffs, you see how bad it is to not have people with some sort of data-driven approach making decisions. I mean, the last couple of years, we've had some amazing, you know, gaffes in decision-making. You know, Joe Maddon, who, you know, fancies himself the genius of baseball, decides to use his best reliever in a five-run game. And these are decisions that are made in the heat of the moment. It's hard to make good decisions. As humans, we're really bad at it. So if you can have data at the core or an approach or a process that you stick with, it helps you avoid making these really dumb emotional decisions.
Okay, you got some games for us?
Sure, let's start in college. Again, the marquee game is Auburn versus Georgia. Auburn is at home, getting 2.5 points. I actually like Auburn there. Georgia obviously has outperformed what everyone thought they would. They are the number one team according to the committee and according to many people in terms of their performance. But the actual underlying two teams that went into the season, Auburn and Georgia, were basically even. They were ranked preseason right next to each other. Auburn obviously hasn't performed as well as they have. But if you think about it as two even teams, I mean, Auburn has played certainly well. They lost to Clemson and then sort of blew a big lead against LSU. I think this line should be much closer to even. So if you're getting points with Auburn at home, I think there's value there.
That would be if Auburn were to beat Georgia, that all the dice tumble at that point, because that would be enormous, right? That's an enormous circumstance.
I'm a big proponent of expanding the playoff field. I actually think the field should be 16, not 4, not 8. And the reason I feel that way is because I think that every college football player Division One, when they wake up in the morning on the first day of their season, they should know that if they win all of their games, they have a chance to win the national championship. That is far from true right now, and it is not right. So I'm all about carnage. I'm all about anarchy. I want everyone that's at the top to lose so that people realize that this should not be a four-team playoff.
Okay, what else do you have for us?
I like the Buccaneers plus 2.5 over the Jets. If I told you
going into the season that the Jets would be a road favorite against any team in the NFL, you probably would have laughed. The reason that this line is the Bucs getting points is because of Ryan Fitzpatrick in for Jameis Winston. But the question that I ask you is Jameis Winston really that valuable? Has he played well this year? And he hasn't. I mean, he's been a very average quarterback. Ryan Fitzpatrick certainly can be an average quarterback, so I think there's value on the Bucs here.
Okay, what else?
Jacksonville, -3.5 over San Diego. I think a lot of people are having trouble really believing Jacksonville because of the long history and litany we have of them being bad. They are similar offensively, but Jacksonville is now the top defense in the league in terms of yards per play. And I think with that, this line should be much closer to 5 or 6 versus the 3.5. They're basically saying that Jacksonville is only a slightly better team than San Diego, and I just don't think that's true.
It's we all say San Diego. They're actually the Los Angeles Chargers now, and you have agreed.
Oh, sorry.
You have agreed with Carville. Carville, who doubled up on that game. Carville, who loves Jacksonville.
And Chuck Todd.
And Chuck Todd, they love Jacksonville in that game. Do you have another for us or just 3 this week?
I got one more.
Good.
And that's going to be our team that no one wants to bet on, our team that no one thinks is good, no one thinks is going to win a game this year. That's Cleveland. Cleveland +11 over Detroit. This isn't so much a bet on Cleveland as it is a bet against Detroit. Detroit is below average offensively. They are, and then Cleveland actually is a top 10 team defensively, whereas Detroit's in the bottom third. So really, how can Detroit be giving 11 points to anyone? Cleveland is off a bye. Detroit's on a short week. 11 points is just too many.
Fabulous. Thank you, Jeff. And Jeff's is bet the process. And I'm going to start to listen to that, because I think I'd like to get a little bit more in depth on these things, because I'm pretty much the most shallow human
you
being
like
I've
numbers.
Ever met.
I
want to hear it.
You took a gamble on this restaurant, so like
losing badly.
But our bathrooms are good. Yeah. All right, thank you, Jeff.
Bye, Tony.
Jeff Ma, boys and girls, love to have him. Do we have any more news? Do we have any news?
Nigel can come up with some news.
Oh,
sure.
Yeah, sure. I can come up with some news. There's a lot of stories going on, but there really is only one that can be the lead for this newscast.
Yeah.
Talking about Clue, Wiffle Ball, and the Paper Airplane. They are the inductees to the 2017 class at the National Toy Hall of Fame.
I have no issue with Clue, which I think is a fine game.
Right.
I have no issue with Wiffle Ball. Wiffle Ball is great.
Right. Paper Airplane?
I'm stunned that Paper Airplane has waited this long. That's the first thing that anybody does as a kid is they take a piece of paper or even a chewing gum wrapper and they make it into a plane and they throw it. How could they have been denied entry for this long time?
It's politics.
Yes, it seems like a Joe Jacoby-like error. You know, he's not in the Hall of Fame. This was not in the Hall of Fame. It dates back to Leonardo da Vinci, who gets sort of credit for making the first paper airplanes.
He gets too much credit for a lot of things. I mean, everybody does
chesty,
that. That's like the other night when the guy in Maryland said to him, I think it was Howard Cosell, who said that sports are a microcosm. No, everybody said that.
Now, on the outside looking in, okay.
Who's still out?
Risk.
Stick.
Sand.
Sand, yes. Sand.
The crime.
Sand's been waiting forever. Sand has always been
sand
there.
Sand isn't a
what
toy.
What about the spitball?
40 years in the desert.
Spitball
is
not
spitball
in this group.
In there?
Sand isn't a toy.
This was the group that was on among the nominees that did not get in. Risk, the Magic 8-Ball, Matchbox Cars, of which we have a couple right here.
Yeah.
My Little Pony.
Nah. Oh, who needs My
Johnny
Little Pony?
Pez candy dispenser, which we thought was more candy.
Not
than
Pez candy, just the dispenser.
Right. I don't know what this is. I know we
talked
about.
That's not a toy. That's a dispenser of candy. Sand is not a toy.
Play food. I don't even remember this one.
Play food.
Transformers and the
Play-Doh.
Play-Doh.
No, play food. I think it means like toy food, like Army Men, but they would have food.
And the card game Uno. Which you could see probably getting in maybe down the road.
Yeah, maybe down the road.
I don't think so. I think you need the Veterans Committee on Uno. I'm not going for Uno.
Risk is probably the
next
one out
of the group. I'm not
going
for Sand.
Sand, you're not on board with that?
No, it's not a toy.
Well, it's sandcastles.
It's a condition of the earth.
In a sandbox?
Would you put a tree in?
Doesn't Moses get credit for playing with sand?
A condition of the earth. No. No.
I'm just amazed. What'd you say?
You're just biased because you can't get out of
a bunker.
Da
Vinci invented the paper airplane? I'm surprised it had to wait 100 years or however long that's been.
It's been about 120, I think.
For Da Vinci?
Yeah.
It's more like 500.
Revolutionary War.
That's
150.
Yeah, something like that.
We're done?
We got the story about the woman sentenced to 120 days for throwing urine on a bus driver.
So we've now established the benchmark for throwing urine on a bus driver.
Apparently, she said they were conversing back. This was the woman whose name is Opal Brown, age 38, says, we were conversing back and forth. It was not an unprovoked situation. Now, what gets interesting
what?
Is...
What?
She had a reason.
You had to...
She had a reason.
The judge said...
She wasn't unprovoked.
Oh, look, there's no justification.
What do you think? She threw urine on him for nothing?
Right, there's no remorse.
Does that mean she carries urine in a bag
with her? Just in case.
No.
Just
she,
in case.
Stadium
she
pal.
Relieved herself at the back of the bus.
Right.
Now, either before the or during the argument, I don't know which... But then when she got off the bus, she reached around, there's like a plastic divider, tossed the urine in the bus driver's face, and then ran.
The bus driver, by the way, so traumatized, could not go to the trial.
They say every time she thinks
of... I don't blame him.
Yeah, to her, actually.
We don't know it's to him.
No, it's to her.
Oh, right.
For the bus driver.
Yes.
120 days in jail.
I feel like it's a bit of a light sentence.
What was the urine contained in?
Just a cup.
That's not easy in the back of a bus.
No.
Speaking as a woman, I just want to say.
Well, if it's a man, I don't think it's that easy. You know?
Yeah. Okay.
Bus. Some football news.
Right.
Hey, Ezekiel Elliott, why don't you sit down?
Yeah, you're out.
You're out. And I guess he will miss at least 4 games the next time that he could possibly play again.
Well, can I ask a question?
Yes.
He's got a 6-game suspension.
Right.
And
appealable in four.
Appealable in four, yeah.
Oh.
The next hearing in Elliott's case is set for December 1st. Pending unforeseen legal intervention, he will miss 4 games. That would be the Falcons, the Eagles, the Los Angeles Chargers, and your Washington Redskins.
Yeah. They can lose
on
three
Thursday
of those four.
Night.
Yeah.
Sure they could.
Is that a Thursday night game?
Oh, yes, it is.
Is it Thanksgiving Thursday?
No.
Oh, just a regular
mm-hmm.
Thursday? Okay.
Also, some news in the realm of football.
What?
They've done a study on Aaron Hernandez's brain.
My.
And
oh
they
my.
Said that this was the worst case of CTE that they'd ever seen in a brain. Now, this young...
In a brain
now,
that young, but
they
how
never,
many have they studied?
Not a lot.
I mean, CTE, we just started thinking about it within the last few years. And in most cases, they are older people than that.
Right.
Now, it may be in time, if you study this, that it is the most freakishly young CTE case that anybody has ever seen, but it's hard with the sample size now to
yes.
know that.
Now, the doctor behind the study said that even despite the fact that they don't have a large pool of data
right.
with this, they said the advanced stage of CTE was unbelievably
alarming.
It
does seem, yeah. I mean, he couldn't have played that much football.
Well, the images, they really, the comparative images of Hernandez's brain against a normal, I put that in quotes, I'm not sure what that would mean, 27-year-old. It's just astonishing. I mean, it's
they've never seen this level of brain damage younger than somebody 46. So,
well again, they haven't been
a lot of data pool there.
Still.
Yes.
Still, we're willing to believe that Aaron Hernandez, who did...
If true.
Yes.
Yes.
If true.
And one last thing, just a melancholy happy trails. John Hillerman passed away. You might know him as Higgins from the show Magnum P.I.
Yeah, I was not a Magnum P.I. watcher. I saw it on television.
At first,
today. I know
you meant Hyleman. I got scared.
But
I
some of the movies he was in,
just on TV.
Check out some of these movies. Last Picture Show, What's Up, Doc, Paper Moon, High Plains Drifter, Blazing Saddles, Chinatown. Had quite an
awesome
great
movie. How old, Nigel? Late 80s or something? How old was
84.
He?
84. And won an Emmy and a Golden Globe for his role as Higgins on Magnum P.I. So
right,
there you go.
No college basketball preview?
No, we're going to wait.
Stony Brook. Maryland.
Stony Brook. Is Binghamton playing this weekend?
I don't know. They probably wait to tip. I don't know.
You said you're good with mascots. Sydney and I with the Adventure Princesses tonight, going to see the Terps season opener against the Terps women against Albany. Do you know?
Hate Albany.
Do you know who the mascot is?
Great Dane.
Very good.
Yeah. No, I know.
Binghamton
I know
tonight against the Morgan State Bears. I believe that's a home.
That
game.
Looks like
that's
a W. That looks like a W for us. Big W for Binghamton. By the way, Binghamton tonight, actual temperature predicted 0.
Ooh.
Wow.
0.
0.
My friend Sheila Doyle told me that.
0.
Well, 0.
Welcome to town, Oregon State.
I got a golf bag. I'm not going to discuss it till Michael sees it. I want him to see it and make a judgment as to whether or not I got a good golf bag or not. We'll take a break when we come back. Old Guy Radio, yes?
That's right.
Old Guy Radio. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Old Guy Radio for the day. This is Heartache Tonight by the Eagles. It's a great song. I don't really care why we're playing it, but Nigel always has a reason why we play things.
Generally, it hit number one.
Did you ever see the two-part special on the Eagles?
There was
one?
They
did a documentary on the Eagles.
I think it's on Showtime.
You have to watch the Rolling Stones documentary on HBO.
Okay, is that good?
Yeah, it's good.
It's really
about Jan Wenner.
It was about 50 years of the magazine and all the sort of book,
I was once
book,
in that magazine.
Bookmarks.
I'm very proud of that. I wrote a story that wasn't so great on Don McLean, who ended up hating my guts, and wrote a letter to the editor about what a terrible human being I was. But I was
not
very...
the excellent 3-point shooter from UCLA and later the Wizards.
No.
Okay, but I was bye-bye Miss America Pie guy.
Yeah, I was very proud to be in Rolling Stone. Very proud. What? Let's go back to Eagles.
Oh yes. Yeah, so this song was hit number one on this date in 1979, and the origin.
This is Don Henley singing lead. This is not Glenn Frey.
That's right.
Critical commentary.
Frey and South, a bloke by the name of J.D. Souther, I think you know.
He's really good.
Right. They wrote the
Linda Ronstadt's boyfriend.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
In the old days,
in the olden
before
times.
Jerry Brown.
Yeah.
Okay.
They were just.
Isn't Jerry Brown's career amazing?
It really is.
Isn't it amazing?
It really is remarkable.
Jerry
yeah.
Brown
it
was
is.
First elected in the 1960s.
I know.
And he's. Is he mayor of Oakland now or governor of the state? I mean, he's been everything.
Yeah.
He's been everything, California.
So Frey and Souther were just messing around in a jam session and listening to Sam Cooke records, and they wrote the first verse, and they said, well, we're kind of stuck. So they called up Bob Seger, and they sang the first verse, and then he said, well, here's your chorus. And that's how the song came.
Isn't it amazing how quickly these things happen when you actually have talent?
Right, yeah.
As opposed to sitting over a typewriter endlessly trying to think, whoa, what's the first chapter in my book? I don't really know. So I have this old Jeep at home. It's a 2000.
I didn't know you still had the Jeep.
2004 Jeep.
Just collecting leaves?
No, No. Carol drives it around.
Okay.
And Carol doesn't go many places. So, you know, it's only got, I don't know, 70,000 miles, 75,000 miles. And it's from 2004. And we're at the stage where it breaks down all the time. Something new is needed because you can't. Things aren't built to last for forever and ever and ever. So yesterday it was a radiator. The radiator's bad, and now we have to put in a new radiator. The new radiator's, it's like $1,000 or something like that. But every few months, there's $1,000 or $2,000 or $3,000, so that over the last, say, 5 years, honestly,
bought four cars.
It's like $20,000. You could buy a new car. That's how much it's been. So it got me to thinking about old cars. And this is I wonder if this is a particularly New York thing. And it probably is. There was the concept of something called the station car. That was like, when I grew up, we only had one car. We did not have enough money to have two cars. And by the way, I had to then borrow, when I got a license, I had to ask my parents, can I borrow the car tonight?
Yeah.
I don't think people do that now.
Yeah.
I think people get their own, everybody gets their own car. In fact, two cars.
Yeah.
Everybody gets everything they want all the
time. Spike and Ike got cars for their 13th.
Yes.
We're just waiting on them. Yeah.
But if you had a second car and you lived where I did on Long Island or in nearby Jersey or Connecticut, where all the trains ran into New York City and everybody worked in New York City, you had something called a station car, which you just took. You left your house, you parked it, and you parked it for free. Like, whoever came up with park for money
was a good idea.
Is an evil genius.
evil genius.
Because now
right up there with bottled water.
Everything parks for money. But you would park the car at the and that's all it would really do. It'd take you back and forth or really locally to the supermarket or something like that. Was that here? You grew up here. Did you have that?
No. We only had one car as well. But there was no station in D.C.
Right. Because
I mean, my father was in a carpool and he took the car 2 or 3 days a week, and the rest, then we walked every place. Or my mother waited for him to come home.
So did you have you had one car, so you didn't have a second car?
Yeah,
that was
we
old.
Talked with about this with Adam last week. We had a 1957 Chevrolet station wagon, which is what I learned to drive on.
Right.
At age 16, when it was like 10, 12, 13 years old or something
like
that.
Yeah, people kept cars longer.
Yeah.
They kept them forever, and they didn't go as...
Well, could
the whole building of suburbs in America and exurbs in America made cars, if you weren't a professional truck driver, put a lot of miles on your cars that normally wouldn't have happened. You could easily have had a car that went, your family would go 5,000-6,000 miles in a year, and that's all they would do.
Was auto financing where 50 years ago where it is now?
No.
Don't
like,
remember.
No.
At some point, they made it easier to buy a car or lease a car for everyone to have a car.
And there were no options on cars back then.
You got the car you got.
Yeah,
right.
They were all stick shift.
Yeah,
and
or you said,
power windows.
Do you have this in a darker color? No, we have this. That's it. Take it or leave it. And you took it.
So you had to have one car longer.
Car. If you had money, maybe you had second cars or something like that.
I don't know anybody
but now kids get cars.
Who had two cars.
One car per person now is what most have.
I think that's true.
Like we're a one-car family, so you should thank me for that.
I do, and I want your car. Well, I want you to go buy a new car.
I guess
and I
my
want you to
car is actually your car.
Yes, I own that, so I'd like it back.
But we're now in the market for a new car.
Well, I'd like you to do that soon.
Well, when's the best? You say the late winter is a good time to buy a car?
No, no. The end of December is the best time. At the end of the, not the model year, the end of the actual year.
Calendar year?
In the last week of every month is the best time to buy a car in that month. And the last week of the year is, people say traditionally, is the,
right? I was always told that. I'm going to Google it, though, now. It may have changed.
Back to the original topic. Why don't you sell this Jeep that's consuming all of your cash?
Okay, I can't sell it because it's not worth
anything.
Well,
he needs it during the construction at Chatter to haul the trash away to the dump, right?
What I'm hoping for, which one person sitting at this table knows other than me, is that that family will buy a car and give me back my car, and I can then get rid of the Jeep.
Okay.
Because I'll drive my sedan, which I haven't driven in a long time. And actually, I don't know if I still can, because sliding into it may be hard at this point on my back. So, because now I've got a big upright thing, and... Yeah,
there's some wear and tear on that sedan. Just fair warning.
Why?
It's a city car.
Okay, well, let's get it fixed. And by us, I mean, let me pay for that. So anyway, all right, so let me get to, like, the lead story in the world today is as a result.
Mondays, by the way, the number one best time to buy a car.
Mondays end of month?
Well, I get so this is an interesting, this is from cars.usnews.com.
Okay.
Says Mondays, May, October, and in no particular time. November, so this is a good time of year. December, and specifically New Year's Eve. So nothing about the end of the month. I was always told that.
Well, New Year's Eve, the last time I looked, would be the end of the month.
Yes.
It would be the 31st.
Yes. If it fell on a Monday in May, that would be perfect,
so,
I would think.
But New Year's Eve, is New Year's Eve, are car dealers open on New Year's Eve? Or do you have to go to
New
a car
Year's
dealer
Eve
anymore?
New Year's Eve has long been the most likely target to get a great deal on a new car. Monthly, quarterly, and annual sales goals all converge, giving dealerships and salespeople the biggest financial bonuses for selling more vehicles.
Can I count on you to do that?
No, I'm totally overwhelmed by the prospect of buying a car. It's really intimidating. I know I'm going to get screwed over on a deal, so
listen,
I could use some help.
These sales goals can add up to savings to as much as 8.3% off the price of a new vehicle. Even December 29 and 30 offer average discounts of 7.8% and 7.9% respectively.
Do you have any idea what kind of car you want to buy?
We don't need it to be new. We'd like it to be a little bit higher than the sedan. We're looking at the Tiquan, the Volkswagen Tiquan.
Yes, okay, because you got to put
Bootsy
up. And
the Hyundai Santa Fe. And Liz is looking at a Subaru Outback.
Oh, you can't get a Subaru.
No,
because it just says, oh, we love our children so much.
It has nothing to do with the kid.
We have a Subaru.
No, we have a very narrow driveway, and so we're looking at the mirror to mirror.
Get a unicycle.
That wouldn't be great for the cars.
Is it too much to ask for someone to send you one in?
That's a big box.
Yeah,
I
mean, what did we get in the mail?
We got all the time.
Did we get Guy's potato chips?
We got
three boxes.
No, that's big
great.
Boxes.
That's yes. I've already.
By the way, I walked
open.
Out of the studio before. People are sitting all the way down the bar.
Wow.
And potato chips are making their way, making
the
round.
I took a bag out.
That was great. So we got a really
too,
big crowd today.
There's some Bloody Marys.
I got to tell the socialite that he really missed it. All right, the biggest story in the country at the moment, if you watch all the news shows, is the Roy Moore story. He's running for Senate in a special election to take the seat of Jeff Sessions.
That election's is not that far off, is
it? No, it's not that far off. Jeff Sessions is now the Attorney General. And there is a story today in the Washington Post that Roy Moore, in 1979, which is 38 years ago, it's a long time, had inappropriate sexual contact, right, with an underage girl. A 14-year-old girl. The age of consent in Alabama then and now is 16. Not 14. Even the president of the United States has said, if true, you should resign. You should drop out of the race. John McCain didn't say if true. John McCain said, get out of the race. Roy Moore is not so, and this is now happening increasingly every day about people who are being identified as having done, was Louis C.K. is the most recent. Louis C.K. inappropriate,
behavior
with women on more than one occasion. They've stopped his movie. his movie is not going to premiere.
Yeah.
I don't know what they're going to do. They can't do a Kevin Spacey and put somebody else in, like Christopher Plummer for Kevin Spacey.
Well, he wrote and directed this movie.
No, but HBO has pulled like everything that he's done with them. They pulled even the
like,
stuff.
Like, I don't think you can go on HBO Go and watch on demand his stuff. They've erased him off of the network. Which, by the way, the fact that they would do that within hours of the accusations becoming public, and they are still that, although there have been rumors and some of these stories going back as much as 5 years.
What do we make of this?
That tells me that HBO essentially knew, and now, you know, knew that these things were true about him, and now that they've
been... What do we make of this climate? What do we make of this?
This climate is one in which victims are finally being believed.
And they are victims. There is no question they're victims.
Yes. Instead of just having dragged them through the mud.
And by the way, a 19-year-old girl would have been a victim as well.
Yes.
It's worse that it's a 14-year-old girl, but a 19-year-old girl still.
And, you know,
But you have to say, you're innocent.
Right. You have to say, if true. At the same time, four women put their names to a story. Four unaffiliated women with no case against Moore politically or, you know, in favor of his opponent, put their name to a story for something that happened almost 40 years ago, were willing to sacrifice their privacy to make this point. So I guess technically you have to say if true, come on.
Does the time span mean anything?
No.
Because they're in many crimes in the country, I believe there is a statute of limitations.
Well, yes, there's a statute of limitations on this, but the time span is one where 40 years ago, you'd never bring this up. Many of these women said, oh, well, I was so ashamed that I didn't want to cause trouble and da, 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 da. And yet, like, it reverberates through the rest of their lives in some cases.
Yes, absolutely. Oh, absolutely. So I'm inclined.
And by the way, in addition to Roy Moore and Louis C.K., both of whom broke, I think, since we've done this show 24 hours ago.
Yes.
Ali Raisman, in an interview with 60 Minutes this weekend, reports that the USA Gymnastics doctor, Larry Nassar...
Well, who's in jail.
Right.
And who's never getting out of jail.
Whose victims number literally in the hundreds. Like, I think she would make over 130.
So before we went on the air today, when you said that, I said to Gene, does this make sense to you? I mean, this is over some long period of time. Wouldn't the gymnasts who knew each other, wouldn't they... warn the next group of you know how that's passed along. Wouldn't they do that? And your position on that was...
Well, they're young, vulnerable girls.
They're really young.
They are girls. And there's often a Svengali-like relationship between an athlete...
Well, they're being victimized by someone in a position of power.
That's right. And also, some coaches, a gymnastic coach in particular, would naturally be putting his hands on...
But this is a doctor. This is a doctor, not a coach. Because you see that they're the famous pictures of Kerry Strug and Bella Carolla.
Right.
Kerry Strug lands, sticks the landing. Her ankle's broken at the time, and her coach carries her off. And you just say to yourself, your first shot is, that's a lovely shot. That's wonderful. This is what happened. And now you look at everything differently.
Mm-hmm.
Now you look at everything differently, right?
Right.
That's where we are now in the culture.
If you are a coach, I mean, I would think your just rule of thumb has to be no hands on anybody. I mean, just show them what they need to do with a stick figure drawing or something.
And yet coaching is, I mean, I think of coaching as hands on.
I was a kid,
I mean, got whacked.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that, and you accepted that. That's the way it is. I mean, I don't know. I was also thinking about this about Roy Moore, whose politics are not my politics. So I find it easier to say that this probably happened in my own mind. If it was somebody I really liked, somebody whose politics I really liked, would I be more inclined to say, well, I don't know if that happened. Well, there's got to be a presumption of innocence.
Read the report.
I don't know.
And Roy Moore doesn't come to this story as an angel. I mean, he has a history, frankly, of lawlessness as a federal judge who didn't obey the law. So,
lawlessness, but not in the sense of robbing banks. Lawlessness in the sense of not following procedure.
But repudiating the law.
He was kicked out as the chief justice in Alabama because he was given a direct order by a superior and didn't do it.
Right.
And that was the Ten Commandments.
The indignance with which the accusations are met, I mean, if he did it, and I'm assuming he knows he did it. There wasn't some psychotic episode whereby he'd forgotten he did it. Like, man, to get up there and claim that those women are lying, it's like, that's just,
I mean, I just want to say, if you're somebody who did something in the last 40 years, you are
50 years, yeah,
you are walking on eggshells today, wondering when it's your turn.
Well, that's the great turn, isn't it? The great turn is how quickly HBO takes everything down from Louis C.K., how quickly Kevin Spacey is not even, he's going to be evaporated from this movie that is going to come out in about a month. He's not going to be in it anymore. Quickly this has happened, that's the greatest turn. Because in the past, yes, if someone came out, that person would not be believed.
But I, Tony, I think that, and I'm not suggesting Netflix is complicit or HBO complicit with Spacey or Louis C.K.
Well, you did just now on HBO.
No, not that they were complicit.
Well, you said they knew. You said they felt they knew.
Yes. I think if there's any question in your mind, you say, you know what? You're suspended. And we're going to look into this. And in a week or 3 days, or I mean, that's what they did with Patino. You know, for crying out loud. They suspended him for like a number of days and then said, all right, obviously this isn't going to work and you're gone. But the HBO literally within hours had erased him. And I just thought, man, that's giving him no benefit of the doubt. I'm not suggesting.
And Weinstein company, Miramax, didn't take long either. No. I mean, they
Right. So, yeah, it's a landslide right now.
All right. This is depressing. Yes. We're stopping this.
It's not depressing, actually.
Hmm?
It's depressing that it happened, but I'm not depressed by the fact that finally people who make this claim don't have to suppress it. You know.
All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back with what? Email and jingle?
That's right.
I'm out of order on the entire show today. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the underpants ad.
God.
MeUndies.
What a transition.
Well timed.
Yes. MeUndies makes feel-good undies your fanny will be proud to wear. Remember the Bee Gees song, Fanny Be Tender With My Love? It always made me giggle. They will be the most comfortable pair of underwear you will ever own. And to check it out yourself, go to MeUndies.com, Tony K. With tons of styles and patterns to choose from both men and women, MeUndies will have the perfect fit for any personality. The MeUndies feeling is unmatched because they use a naturally soft fabric that is 3 times softer than cotton. And for a limited time only, check out MeUndies' first ever glow-in-the-dark print called Lights Out. Why not update your underwear drawer and glow at the same time? Why not? I can think of a couple of reasons, actually. If underwear isn't your thing, and we hope that's not reaching too many people, MeUndies also makes the softest socks in the world, which we're waiting for.
Yeah, we need the socks.
We continue to wait for the socks. It's going to be 20 degrees tonight.
We got the chips.
Where are the socks?
We got the chips. Where are the socks?
To get 20% off the best...
Send the socks.
Stop the hammering.
To get 20% off the best and softest underwear and socks you will ever own, free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee, go to... MeUndies, MeUndies.com, Tony K. That's MeUndies.com, Tony K.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
I hear a quaking on my phone. Can I use this thing to watch the red zone? Will Bond said go with the Samsung, but what the hell? It's compatible with my CTS. Oh, but using it causes so much stress.
The lyrics are Jeff Holscher, all the way from Iwazumi, Japan. The vocals, Michelle Negrelli. And the message is, technology is great when you can figure it out. When you can't, just hand the phone to Michael. That's Heart, right? That was a Heart song, wasn't it?
Alone.
Yes. Before we get into the mailbag, let me say thank you to Washington Post movie critic Ann Hornaday, to our predictive expert Jeff Ma, host of the podcast Bet the Process. Also want to thank today's sponsors, MeUndies, Policy Genius, and Blue Apron. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Play. If you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. From Charlie Burtz in Springfield, Virginia. Could you please stop making fun of that time I emailed the show and ask you for the favor that time? My friends keep laughing at me. You know what I'm talking about, and so do they. So please just stop before wolf season comes. That makes me laugh. Jeannie and I actually did the lunch. We did the lunch at the Palm, if I'm not mistaken.
No, it was at Duke's.
Was it at Duke's? Mm-hmm. It's that Duke long Siebert's. Ago.
I remember
deadly.
What I ate.
Deadly.
Yes.
What'd you right? have?
I had Duke's salad.
We vowed never to do this again.
Right. And they were lovely people. It was
that's not,
it's not you. It's us.
It was as painful shit. For them as it was it's for us, awful. I'm sure.
Just awful. Steve O'Brien in Middleton, Wisconsin. My father passed away last week at the age of 91. I wanted to thank you and the gang for providing hours of entertainment as I drove from here in Wisconsin to Peoria, Illinois, many times over the last 4 months to visit him as his health began to fail. Even the woman to whom I'm related by marriage, who tires of my constantly referencing the show, began to warm to you a little, but not much. My dad struggled throughout his life to keep his golf handicap under 20, yet had the great fortune to cart a hole-in-one on 3 separate occasions, his last when he was 82. As we were discussing the wording for the obituary, a disagreement arose about the plural for hole-in-one. I said we should ask Michael, as he is a Penn grad and an ex-teacher and knows more about golf than just about anyone. Sorry, Steve Sands. It seems quite clear that he had 3 hole-in-ones, but there was a contingent that thought it was 3 holes in one. Michael, which is it?
I would say holes in one. You have a compound noun here, and the hole is going to be the main idea of that term.
I would agree.
And that's an English person yes. and a golfer.
Yeah.
So,
Dan, you at Latrobe, Pennsylvania, speaking of golf. Isn't that the birthplace of Arnold Palmer, or at least where he played golf all the time, Latrobe? Although not as cool as being an MD, I'm hoping you'll give a shout-out and a TK salute to loyal little Jim Silvis. Jim has popped up in a few emails over the past year during his campaign for judge in Westmoreland County, Pennsylvania. Jim was successfully elected yesterday, and I will be the first to greet him with a hearty Lachizery, Your Honor. From Tim Cree in Fort Collins, Colorado. As I was driving my daughter to school this morning, I noticed the car next to me had an air freshener hanging from the rearview mirror. I then noticed one hanging above the unoccupied passenger window, then 2 more in the back. What in the name of anything holy is going on in that car that requires 4 air fresheners? And do I need to alert the CDC? From Mike in Burke, Virginia. You called him on it, but there's nothing better than hearing Johnny Gentile, the Wizard of White Bread, Chris Saliza, try to pronounce kibitz and having it come out like kibbutz. That's Shaputzvah. Stan Naki, capital of Nebraska is Lincoln. Just curious, what is the capital of District of Columbia? The moment it's chatter. Ron Flatter in Las Vegas, who does a show with Brent Musburger all the time, right? You've been on the show. Dear Grandpa Obutsi, listening to Thursday's confusion over the capital of Nebraska reminded me of a David Letterman joke that I've beaten to death. You ask around the studio at chatter, how do you say it, Louisville or Louisville? Louisville or Louisville? How do you pronounce the capital of Kentucky? And everyone answers. Then you say, I pronounce it Frankfurt. By the way, the capital of Nebraska is Lincoln, and the capital of Nevada is Carson City.
We figured that out ultimately.
Timothy Weatherhead in D.C. writes, I never took seriously your need to go to bed early until Wednesday's show. Sweet Jesus. Your verbal napalm left nothing but utter devastation in its path. That poor guy at Maryland who had the audacity to ask you about soccer, he probably hasn't left his dorm room yet. Hell hath no fury like a tired Dr. Tony. Go to bed.
This lack of sleep is
so early last night. I was like in bed by 9:15. It was really good.
It's like Bootsy.
Andrew Coe in San Francisco. The real reason Chris Saliza did not make the top 12 for CNN election coverage is because they first wanted to see if he knew the answers to questions like, what is the capital of Nebraska? And do elevators work when there's a power outage? Oh, wouldn't it be great to send a box of Omaha steaks to chatter with a note that says, don't eat it, Saliza, or with apologies to Melman Seinfeld days, no steak for you. Thank you all, yes, including Chris, for the wonderful laughs over the years. Chris in Rockville, Maryland. I listen and watch New Day every morning at work. They must really ask Saliza to not be funny. tremendous shot at Saliza. Tremendous. You're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always. Do wear white, and thanks so much for coming. Big crowd. Thank you.
Stop the hammering. Stop the hammering out there. Who's got a hammer? Where is it?
Stop it!
Where's the hammer?
I don't know.
Is it on the... Go up on the other floor. Somebody go up there and stop the hammering. Stop the hammering.
I was lying my head in the hospital bed just before the room caught fire. I was thinking back about what you did to fly. And with Johnny down in Francisco, who had broken through the boot heel floor. Ain't it funny how the good times never came? Don't call me baby, don't say a single word. It ain't what you like. I've been waiting for this moment, baby, for the rest of my life. Oh, I was standing in line beside the highway sign just before the buckshot hit. I started fading into that neon light of the night. And it ain't like I predicted, like one day the X just hit. Ain't it funny how the things they say remain? Don't call me baby, don't say a single word. It ain't what you like. I've been waiting for this moment, baby, for the rest of my life. Try. Don't call me baby.